This is the fourth in the podcast series for the Australian Wool Innovation and the Livestock Collective Partner Program. Today's guest is Brodie Carpenter, co-owner of Low and Level Shearing with around 30 people part of his team, a proud shearer himself, a farmer. He's won Tasmanian State Shearer of the Year. This is all by the age of 29. Our favourite thing about this series is that we have been able to record with people who are genuinely out and about and working hard within the wool industry. And we chat about it in this episode, but shearing contractors receive a lot of phone calls. So please excuse a couple of those in the recording. We've got today Brodie Carpenter, a shearing contractor and farmer from Tasmania. Thank you so much, Brodie, for joining us.
Nah, no worries, Tiff. Nah, it's good. Pleasure to be here.
I've been picking your brains already. So this is an exciting podcast to get into. Just, I think, something a little bit different to what we've had the last couple of times, but we'll get straight into it. The first question, as I tell everyone, is the hardest. So describe yourself in three words.
Oh, I don't know now. Slow, old, and a bit like a camel.
Well, we were just talking about how you're actually quite young for a shearing contractor and have a really young crew. So I don't know about the old part, maybe slow, but looking at your stats at your shearing competitions, I hear you're not slow either. So I don't know about that. So straight into the next one, tell us about yourself. Like, who are you and where are you at the moment? And yeah, what do you do?
Yes, my name's Brodie Carpenter, born and bred. East Coast Tasmania, yeah, born into a farming, shearing family, basically, so I've taken that on. Yeah, left high school and done a plumbing apprenticeship, and the day I qualified was the day I quit, and I went shearing, basically, after that, and it all sort of rolled on from there. Met some good blokes, and yeah, life's been a roller coaster since then, a good roller coaster.
How did you always know then, even when you were doing your plumbing apprenticeship, you wanted to get into the shearing game?
Yeah. So my dad's been a farmer shearer his whole life, and I had a choice when I left high school. I either had to go to uni or get an apprenticeship. There was no allowed to go straight to the sheds or anything like that. So I had to choose one, and yeah, I went with the apprenticeship.
What made you want to pursue a life in the sheds? What was it about it?
Probably mainly grown up with it, and it was what you grew up with, like with anything, especially same with farming, but the industry and the people you meet and the buzz. You have the taste of two lives, you know, you go into that, work for someone and be a tradesman and living in the city and everything like that, to the total opposite life of living in the shed. And I definitely picked shearing shed life over being a tradie in a busy city for sure.
Yeah, and you've built a shearing contract business as well as you're trying to develop your farm and your own herd. So what does that look like for you? How many people have you got on your team? Or tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we generally employ around 30 people for the busiest parts of the season. So through May till August is the busiest ewe shearing, but we shear all year round. But in that, we generally employ that 12 to 15 people a week at least on a minimum, but up around that 30. And also, have an employee on the farm now part-time as well, so that's taken off. It was once all just running everything sort of by myself and shearing, but, yeah, it sort of took a big turn and we started our own and went on from there. And now, yeah, you're in control of a lot of people.
So, like, managing that many people, like, at its peak?
It's good when you got good people. And we haven't had bad people yet, so I'm yet to experience that. We're going on 4 years now, and we've only really, I'd say, attracted good people. And we had good men and women to start off with, and they really helped our business grow to where it is now.
And so what made you want to go from, like, working for someone to a contractor, and how did you find your people? I know the shearing industry has a reputation for sometimes having not so good people, but all I've heard about your crew is really positive things. So how did you go about starting that up and laying those foundations for your business?
Yeah, well, there's three of us in the business, myself and another fella called Jack and another one, Duncan, was always been pretty good mates. And we all sort of come together and sick of getting dealt the hand we were getting dealt by the blokes that we were working for, and shearing contractors in a lot of it are notorious for not paying super and stuff like that. And there's an industry that sort of got left behind with that, and we were sick of getting dealt that hand. So we was like, we can fix this and be advocates for the industry and put it where it should be. And that's what we decided. And a few teams we worked for, we picked the eyes out of the men to come with us that had the same mindset, and they followed suit and said, well, if you make something of it, we'll come with you. And we did. And they kept their word and come with us. And it's definitely the men that have shaped us a lot of to where we are today.
But the first steps for you starting out as a contractor, so you found your two people, and you said earlier that you bought the crushing cradle.
Yep,
so
yep.
Did you have your money saved? You bought the crushing cradle, and then was it all just on from there? You just found the work and you were off? Or was it a bit tricky initially to get the consistency with the cradle?
Oh, we had a few jobs. We actually had my dad manages a station in the middle of Tasmania at Connerville Station, and I got onto him and he let us have an open day there and was advertising it. And we put out a few flyers, and one of our mates' dad, well, the other person I'm in business with, Duncan White, his dad was involved in the Rotary Club, and they borrowed their big table barbecue and brought that out and cooked them a feed and demonstrated what we got, because we were the first ones in Tassie to ever introduce crutching trailers into the state.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And yeah, so the first one we actually got from Thargaminda up in Queensland.
How
and
did you
got
get
it back
it? Yeah. Did you have to drive to Queensland to pick up the trailer and then sail it? Like, there's a few logistics involved in being from Tasmania, sail it across.
Yeah. That was our first taste of organising, I think. You know, we had a mate here that went, picked it up from here and took it to this mate, and this mate took it to here. And then we got it on a truck and tried to go from there and got it trucked down to Melbourne and then got it dropped off at Devonport in Tasmania, and then we towed it there. This is a little bit of a funny story. So we chucked it in with our bosses. Yeah, me and Duncan worked for the same boss then, and we told him what was going to do. And they went and picked the trailer up from Devonport and pulled up at the first servo, and the next person to pull in behind us was our old boss straight away.
So, it's like an induction of fire. It's like it's happening.
Yeah. So it was happening. But, yeah, we had crutching trailer day, and we had two clients sign up there on the day, and that was all we got.
Oh, wow.
There and then everyone was dubious of how it was going to go. And these two were two pretty big farmers, and we still have a lot of respect to them today. And because they were the first two to give us a job, they get to pull a little bit. They can sort of pick when they want to go. You know, we give them that little bit of respect back because they got us started. And we got there and done their crutching for them. And one of them said, do you want to do our shear? And then we said, yeah, no, for sure. And that was our first shearing job we'd picked up. And I had a couple of other little cash job sheds we did, and we included them in the run. So that kept us going for a couple of months. We started in October and we was trying to build up a kitty and paying other people that were working for us. And we never actually took a paycheck out of the company each until Christmas Eve at the end of December. So we still had to go 3 months without being paid. That was probably the hardest part of getting started, and it just rolled on from there. Word of mouth of these other blokes, and people started ringing, and we went on from there, picked up a couple of big jobs, and that got us going from there on.
Do you still have that original crutching trailer, or have you upgraded?
No, we've brought another one. We've got two now.
Yeah.
But no, we still have the original one. I don't think we'll ever get rid of it. Yeah, we'll chop it up and make it into a framed memorabilia or something.
How old were you guys? You said earlier you're 29 now. So how many years ago was that? How old when you just started this business? That's even itself is pretty impressive.
Yeah, 20. I think it was 25. I was. Jack would have been 25 or 4 or 5, and was 25 or 6. Yeah, when we got started. So we sort of were going on as the youngest contractors in Tassie at the time. Yeah.
But like, it's really young to be managing people and the amount of people you manage. So what have you learnt between now and then about people management, like business aside?
You should never ever just speak your mind. There's a lot of different characters out there, and people take things a lot of different ways. So you've got to be patient with people and let people learn things for themselves. You know, you've got to stand back and let them work it out. It's probably the best way of them learning at times. But at the same time, you never want to lose control, and be in touch with your workers. Never lose touch with your workers. That's for sure. You know, everyone's important. Every little job's important. And you being a shearer, you're no more important than a wool handler or a presser or a cook or anyone like that. And definitely pitch in and give everyone a hand if they need it in their section, because you never know how bad their day is actually going.
Yeah. Did you have to do like people training, or have you done any short courses on that? Because that would be one of the hardest parts of the role, surely. It's just literally managing all of those people if you've got like 30 staff at its peak.
Yeah, that's for sure. If you don't want to go to uni to be a psychologist, become a shearing contractor. Because Yeah, definitely people's shoulder to cry on or anything like that at times. And you get involved with everyone. You learn to know everyone's families and everyone has problems, and you're the point of call a lot of the time. But that's just part of the business and part of the journey and looking after your staff. But yeah, you do learn how to handle people in lots of different ways. That's for sure.
Yeah. And you said when I first called you earlier that it's a couple of hours every day of phone calls being a shearing contractor. That's a lot of ringing. You're like a CEO of a company, really.
There's a lot in it, and people don't realize. They talk about your contracting rate, what they are actually paying for, until you do it. And the bigger you get, the more there is. That's definitely for sure.
And we were talking before the interview, and you said when you have good quality shearers and good staff, your reputation, like building that business, it sort of preceded itself. So it's been easy to get clientele because of those initial foundations. So how do you get shearers? That's a lot of, or shearers and shed hands. That's a lot of staff for the peak. Do you have a lot return every year, or how do you attract and how are you retaining your staff?
We have a lot of local staff. We do have a few mainland, like we call it mainland from here, but Australia-wide staff coming from New South and WA and Queensland and Victoria and South Australia. And there's a lot of people ring up. Like in the first year, I was ringing them, people that I'd met shearing while I was shearing around Australia in different states, and sort of become good friends with them, and rang them up and said, "Hey, we're in our busy season. Can you come and help us out?" And that was when we were first starting, and we got a big bunch of local people. When we started 4 years ago, the second year in, we put a couple of young learners on, put them through shearing schools, and they're good young shearers now, and they're definitely coming through and paying their way now and stuck with us. But the, well, I'll call them mainland shearers, but interstate shearers, they're ringing us now. So I have, it'd be nothing to get 4 or 5 phone calls a fortnight from interstate shearers wanting to come and shear with us.
And why do you think that is? Why do you think they're coming to you?
I think we offer a lot more than others. Like a lot of people get people down here and they charge for accommodation and stuff like that. And the work we've got is consistent work. That's where a lot of our staff stay with us, because we've got work 12 months of the year, basically. And that's what people need, especially if they get mortgages and that. They need stability to stay with the industry and keep them in it. Because a lot of people will do it for 3 or 4 years and then go and do something else because they need a home loan or something like that, because it's only seasonal work. But we've created a stable run for them for 12 months of the year, and they've got work 5 days a week, 12 months a year, basically, for our full-time staff that are with us.
Throughout your entire time shearing, where's the best place you've gone to? Because I believe you travel a lot as a shearer. Yeah, where's been your favorite place?
Probably Raw Lina, I reckon. Yeah, we only just come back from Raw Lina, me and a couple of the other people that work for us. We drove over there, and it was a great experience. Probably best place offshore, I reckon. Yeah,
Oh, really?
unbelievable.
Yeah. And so is that the first time you've gone and shorn at Rulina, or has that been something you've done for a few years?
Nah, first time. Yeah, it was the first time I was shorn in WA, actually. Yeah, which was
And is
unreal. So,
it something you always wanted to do, was shear in the roll in a shed?
yeah, definitely. I've seen it a few times years ago back in Outback magazine and saw it. And, biggest, most remote sheep station in Australia was sort of like shearing. I was like, oh, I'd like to say that I've shorn there one day. And when we heard the Jumbuck Pastoral was selling it and Twiggy Forest was buying it and it could get destocked and be turned into something else, so it was like we'd jump on board. And that's where your connection comes with other shearers. Like a shearer from WA, the shore of us, that become pretty good friends with, he actually got us a job because he knew the contractor. So it was good gig and sort of paid off having them friendships really from across there, vice versa.
And how many stands at the Roll in a Shed, and how many sheep do you get through a day?
16 stand. I think 2,700 was the most we saw in a day. There was the most. Yeah.
How long did it take? How many sheep are on Rulina, do you know?
We saw 31,500, but they have shorn up to 100,000 there back in the, I think it was early 90s, but they was 70,000. But that had shocking seasons. I think 3 years ago they shore 59,000 there, but that was back to 31. They haven't had rain for 2 years, so.
And just for those who don't know what that might look like, shearing's interesting in the sense that you work together, live together. So, you're very isolated out there. How does that go when you're all in each other's pockets every day?
Yeah, you sort of, it does wean some people out, especially out there. Like, I think it was nearly 2 hours to get in the driveway from the highway. So, and you're a long way from getting a coffee. So people that are only new to the industry and hadn't been in that outback setting before, you're out there to work and you're not coming home till the shed's done. You know, it's not just drive home on the weekend. So the people who get up Saturday morning and go and get a coffee, you don't have that. So you've got to make do. That brings a few people unstuck, but the majority of people, I think it was a team of 35, which was good. That was a great crew. There was people from England there. There was people from New Zealand, like those from all over the place, which is good. You met new people. They were fresh faces, and everyone was there to work, which was great.
So was that the first thing you did when you got back out, was go for a coffee? Is that what you missed the most out at Rolling
I don't drink coffee, but
Up?
other people who were in the car definitely, they were jumping out for a coffee.
So how does the Rolling contract work? So that's just one contractor because it is so many people, or is that lots of individual shearers and like wool handlers?
Yeah, they all work for the one contractor and he organises a lot of them, which is a lot of organisers. It was kind of nice being there, not being the contractor. There's a few niggly problems of a night time and you just sort of think, oh, yeah, I'm not the contractor, so that's not my problem tonight. So.
And so for those who are like yourself who are thinking about starting a shearing business, what are the first steps you took? So you found your business partners. What advice would you have to those who, want to start out? Like, what does that actually look like, starting a shearing run from scratch?
Don't just sleep on it for one night when you're thinking about it. Sleep on it for a couple of months for sure. But the main advice I'd give anyone that was going out, and hope people do, because it's a life changer if you do do it, but be prepared. It's a lot of work and a lot of effort, and it will engulf your life doing it. But main piece of advice is look after your men, and your men will look after your clients, or men and women. Yeah, I shouldn't just say men, but you know, your employees. Look after your employees, and your employees will look after your client and stick up for them, because it's definitely the way to go. It's good employment, good facilities, and you attract good men and you attract the good work. And it takes a long time for a good name to get around, and it's a short time for a bad name to get around. So you just got to remember that.
And for those who want to start out as a shearer or a wool handler, what's the first step you would encourage them to do, and any advice to them starting out?
If you're going to do it, definitely have a mindset of being proud of what you do and have pride in your work. But you can contact through AWI, or I think it's SCAR now. They're in South Australia, and it was Primary Employers, but I think they've amalgamated with SCAR. But get in contact with them and they'll get in contact with a trainer and go to a school and see if you like it and go from there, and they'll get you in contact with some contractors that are willing to take learners on.
And how many learners do you take on per year?
You probably don't say it's per year. You probably say learners. It's probably, I'd say it's more of a 2 year project with them, because it takes them 12 months to sort of get going, and then you've got them in that up and coming, what you'd say probably intermediate stage, for 12 months after that as well before they sort of become a professional shearer. But I've got three at the moment, and two of those are female and one male, and they're great. Yeah, great workers, great people, easy to have around, and that they're going to have big careers in front of them.
What do you look for when a learner comes to you and says, I want to come and work for you? What traits do you look for in them as a person to be like, you can be part of my team and it's worth investing the time into teaching you? Is there certain attributes?
Yeah, a lot of them come through by rousing for a while. So two of them, they've been rousing for us for 12 months, and they're like, I want to have a go of shearing. So we send them away to a shearing school, and they come back and they sort of decide whether they want to do it or not. And if they want to pursue it, well, we take them on from there and get them shearing. But probably just, it doesn't matter what you are, shape, size, fitness, ability, or whatever, just as long as you've got a big heart and you're willing to have a go and a good mindset, then and you'll make it for sure.
So I believe shearing your first 100 is a big deal in the shearing world. Do you remember when did you start out learning? And do you remember what shed you were in when you were able to shear your first 100?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the shed, but it was a shed in New South Wales out near Rand, and was working for a contractor called Kelvin Cooney back then. And there was a couple of us, and one of my mates who I went to shearing school with, we bunked together, and then we went away to New South Wales, and straight up, because shearing wasn't going that well in Tasmania then, big droughts and stock prices in downturn, so it was pretty hard to get a learner's stand. So we went to New South Wales, and I remember my mate who I bunked with then, Jack Cummins was his name, he shore his first 100 the first day, and I think I shore 92.
Oh, sorry,
that
just
day.
getting
And
more fit.
yeah, so the next day I was determined. I was out of bed early and had a big breakfast. I was like, I'm going to shear 100 today, you know, like, and I did. I just got it. So.
Why is it such a big deal if you're a shearing apprentice per se to get that first 100? Is that when you start calling yourself a real shearer?
No, not really. Like you shear 100, you are considered one of the gang probably more or less then, but shearing your first 100, it's just a big milestone, you know, triple figures. But then after that, you know, it comes on, you shear your 200, your 300. After that, you know, it goes on and on. And there's blokes that shear for us, young Sam Byers, he's a really good advocate for the industry and the skill that he's got. You know, he's shorn 523 or something like that. You know, it's in 8 hours. It's a big day, a lot of money, unreal fitness, unreal mindset to be able to do that, you know, but that's where it leads. And he was in the same boat once trying to shear 100 sheep in a day, you know.
How do you like it? Is a lot of physical work. You're referred to as athletes, like your energy output as well as what you should be consuming. Do you get your guys to do like yoga or something? I don't know, being part of the get like job, because you really would have to look after your body.
Some people take it serious. Some people, like the general gist of a shearer back in the day, was known as a bit of a party animal and
Yeah.
drinking all the time. But it's changed a lot now, especially with people shearing these records and chasing the shearing competitions. I know when we were trying to get serious in them and made the lower grades in the Tassie team a couple of times, you know, and Sam, he's in the open, and Robbie Glover, who shears for us, he's sure for Australia. You know, they were going to the gym and stuff like that, preparing themselves for the comps when they were shearing for Australia. But it was at one stage, you know, I was nothing to run 7 or 8 Ks every night after work. Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure.
And
Definitely a bit of fitness is always good. It does help, for sure.
so the shearing competitions, when I was looking and researching you, I believe that's something you're obviously quite passionate about at a local level, and I see your crew compete as well. So tell us, for those who don't know, what is your shearing competition and why is it important, not only for the industry, but I suppose for your crew?
Yeah, there's two sides to the shearing competitions. There's speed shears and sports shears, and we're big advocates for the sports shear. I mean, speed shears, just who can get it off the quickest, more or less. But sports shears, how clean you are, points on the board, out the back, second cuts, which is what the farmer's looking for. You want the least amount of second cuts, but get around the sheep the quickest. Saying second cuts, that's cutting a full staple of wool in half. So you're halving the farmer's profit by cutting that in half. So basically getting the fleece off in one piece is the importance of it, the shearing competition. But it brings a lot of people together to hone in on their skills and set a bar to where they need to be, because they see the good shearers such as Robbie Glover and Duncan White and Sam Byers, and oh, there's endless amounts of good Tasmanian ones. But that's the benchmark where they want to be and come up through the grades winning. So there's novice, intermediate, senior, and open shearing. And yeah, basically it's honing in on the skills, and that's the benchmark you want to be at. You want to be in first place, and it is good for your business if you've got your men up in them top ranks, definitely, for sure.
So you definitely used it as a bit of a marketing ploy when you were starting out trying to build up those clientele.
Look, yeah, probably a little bit. Not,
Yeah.
we sort of had to work, and but the men done that for themselves. You know, it was employing the men that were up in the top of them, for sure. So that, yeah, we probably wasn't sort of a marketing strategy, but it was definitely in the back of our mind that they're the men that people want to shear their sheep. So if you can get all them in one team, it'd be a really good advertisement scheme, for sure.
I wanted to talk about too. So, as well as having your shearing contract business, you, I believe, are someone who's starting out as a farmer. You're there in the background building that part of the business. So, why do you want that? Like, why was that important to you to have your own mob of sheep? And I believe you lease some land, and there'd be challenges in that, I presume, trying to get your foot in the door.
Yeah, for sure. It's not like any business. You don't want to have your eggs in the one basket. And I mean, shearing's not forever. It's a hard job. It's definitely a hard job. You know, if you can do 10 or 20 good hard years at it, you'll make a lot of money and rewards. But it's sad to see a lot of the time you see shearers don't invest money, and they get to the end of it and they've sort of, you know, still got nothing. They've lived that party life, or you can go down the path and you can invest it and have something for yourself at the end of your shearing career. And a lot of shearers are interested in farming and come from rural backgrounds. So yeah, starting off now, you're trying to build the farming and your shearing's definitely funding that getting started. So that's probably where a lot of it comes from. And you get passionate about wool. And I'd say shearers probably become the best farmers in one retrospect, because they're in amongst it every day, seeing all sorts of different sheep and way people do it and what ways not to do it. So you're, it's a first on hands view of it straight up.
So what is your favourite thing about wool?
Favourite thing about wool is probably the wool industry, the jobs it offers. It's not just shearing and harvesting in the wool shed. I mean, there's receptionists in Sydney working for AWI. You know, they're involved in the wool industry. It's a massive chain, and we're probably only the second chain in it. I mean, the first chain's the grower, and then it becomes us. But by the time it's getting down to that next product, there's people selling it. There's people modelling it. You know, it's a worldwide industry. And it can involve a lot of people. You don't just have to be a shearer or a wool handler to be involved in the wool industry. It's worldwide, for sure.
What challenges do you predict for the industry and for you as a contractor in particular in the next few years?
Rising cost is probably the biggest one in shearing wages and everything. Like, it's for farmers and cost too much for them to believe in the industry that way, and they all go cropping or something like that, you know. And self-shedding sheep are a big worry to us when they come in. I mean, it's probably going to beat me in my time. Like, I probably won't see it when it's all self-shedding sheep, but it'll be eventually the way it'll go, for sure.
So you mentioned before we started recording that a big part of your values as a person is looking after staff. So you've got a good staff retention rate. What are the key elements, do you think, of looking after people? What are people? You've spoken about the consistency, but we briefly spoke about earlier about you feed your staff, you house your staff, you clothe your staff. Do you think that is what makes you, I suppose, a good employer?
Yes, but an organisation is a big one. People don't want to be stuffed around. They want to know. You know, they want to have security that you've got work in front of you. But yeah, big ones, feeding them at work. So farmers feed. Else they don't bring any food, and that all comes for free for them. A big thing is eating properly. You know, people, you know, used to say at school, some people have 2-minute noodles and stuff like that for lunch. You're doing a job where people shearing 200 a day, you're using as much energy as a marathon runner doing a full marathon, you know. And when the farmers cook, they cook them something good and nutritionist, and it really breaks down that stigma between shearer and farmer, which stuck around for a long time. You know, a lot of on our run, the farmers invite them down. They have good smoko rooms and do them in the smoko rooms, but a lot of people invite them to the main house, and the farm staff and the farmer themselves and their wife or their husband, sometimes it's a female farmer, either or, they sit down and have a meal with them, and it really breaks that tension. You know, they form a bit of a bond with the shearers, and staff returning, you know, it's a good atmosphere all round when that happens, and just good facilities. They really respect the staff, a lot of our farmers, and have good facilities for them. And we try and do the same thing with accommodation, just have good living quarters for them. You know, they're together most of the year, these guys, and a lot of people used to have the argument shearing, you know, oh, I only shear for 5 days. I don't need to update my quarters or anything like that. It's like, mate, it's 2024 and it's 5 days for you, but it's every day for these guys. So, you know, you're just saying it's only 5 days at your place. It's every day. And everyone has attitude like you. It's just not going to come around. But lucky we don't have any farmers like that. And they're pretty happy to update their facilities, and they've all been happy to feed them, which is great.
Yeah, no, that's, I think, a really important part of it. If your staff being comfortable. Yeah, for sure. And that leads to the last question is, what next? Are you wanting to continue to grow the business, get another team perhaps, take on the mainland?
I don't really. Yeah, we sort of just take on as it is. We won't go to the mainland, that's for sure. We sort of stay in our patch, so to speak, in Tassie. But definitely there's different avenues of investing and stuff like that within the company as well, you know, shearer training and hosting days and stuff like that. But there's always more work to take on. Like, I've got a list bigger than my arm of farmers we could take on now, you know, that ring up. But just, you sort of end up like your bosses, your left, they just get too big, and you have to employ that lower grade of staff, so to speak, that don't fit the match.
Yeah.
More with it would be the main thing. So we just want to keep offering a good business for people to use, and consistency and being the size we are now. I think that's where it's at. just we can keep providing good staff for them where we are now, and that's the way we want to be, and we, that's the way we want to be until the day we chuck it in.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
Just everyone in the industry, just yeah, respect people's views, I suppose, and stay humble and protect the industry, basically, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your time, Brody. We have included in the show notes a link to the training opportunities with AWI as discussed in the episode, and a link to Shearing Contractors Association of Australia if you're after more details for low and level shearing.